Water. It's just water, isn't it? It's everywhere.
Seems
so simple, so ordinary.
Right, but it's deceptive.
Totally. What if I told you that simplicity hides some really, really weird properties? Stuff that's almost like counterintuitive.
And those weird properties are exactly why life exists here.
Exactly.
And that's what we're diving into today. We're really going to unpack the uniqueness of water, drawing a lot from Dr. Hoffman's fantastic lecture on the topic.
Yeah, he did a great job laying it out.
He really zeroed in on what makes water so incredibly special, why life basically depends on it. It's fascinating stuff.
Okay, so that's our mission then. Let's figure out the how and the why behind water being so special. And like Dr. Hoffman did, let's start right at the beginning with its basic chemistry. All right, chemistry 101 refresher time. Molecules. Covalent bonds. That's where atoms share electrons, right?
Yep, that's the basics. But Dr. Hoffman really emphasized a key detail, how they share. It's not always equal.
Ah, okay, so there's sharing and then there's sharing. What's the difference then between nonpolar and polar bonds?
Well, it all comes down to evenness. In a nonpolar bond, maybe between two identical atoms, they share the electrons perfectly equally, like a totally fair tug of war.
Okay, equal pull. Got it.
But in a polar bond, it's unequal. The electrons are still shared, technically, but they spend way more time buzzing around one atom than the other.
So one side gets more electron time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that creates a slight charge difference. The end where the electrons hang out more becomes slightly negative. We use that Greek letter delta for slightly negative. That one becomes slightly positive plus share. Still sharing, but definitely unbalanced.
Unequal sharing. Even though they're supposed to be partners in the bond, what makes one atom, greedier for electrons than another? Is it magnetism or something?
Huh. Not quite magnetism, but it's an inherent property. It's called electronegativity.
Electronegativity. Okay.
Yeah, Dr. Hoffman explained it's basically how strongly an atom pulls on shared electrons. And there's a pattern on the periodic table. It generally increases as you go up and to the right.
Up and to the right. So elements like oxygen?
Bingo. Oxygen is way up there, super electronegative. So when it bonds with hydrogen, which has much lower electronegativity, oxygen just dominates that electron tug of war.
It pulls the shared electrons closer to itself.
Right. Makes the oxygen ends slightly negative and the hydrogen ends slightly positive.
Okay, so that inherent polarity driven by oxygen's electron greed, that's the foundation. Dr. Hoffman said this explains pretty much everything else, didn't he? Starting with hydrogen bonds.
Exactly right. Polarity is the key that unlocks everything else. And yeah, first stop, hydrogen bonds.
Now, these aren't like normal chemical bonds, are they?
Good point. No, they're not chemical bonds. They don't actually change what the water molecule is. They're more like attractions between neighboring water molecules.
Attractions.
Yeah, remember those I's plus hydrogens and the oxygen? Well, the positive hydrogen of one water molecule is attracted to the negative oxygen of a nearby water molecule.
Ah, like tiny magnets clicking together.
Sort of. They're weaker than covalent bonds for sure, but there are so many of them and they're constantly forming and breaking. They create this sort of temporary network?
Okay, temporary attractions.
Yeah.
Seems a bit flimsy. What can these actually do?
Yeah.
Dr. Hoffman mentioned something pretty dramatic, defying gravity.
We did. Capillary attraction. Or capillary action, you hear both.
Right.
It's how liquids can move upwards in really narrow tubes, seemingly fighting gravity. Dr. Hoffman used the example of blood moving up into one of those thin glass tubes, a lancet.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. It just zips right up.
Exactly. And in nature, the huge example is transpiration in plants. Water goes from the soil, up the roots, through the stem, sometimes hundreds of feet up a massive tree and out the leaves.
Hundreds of feet? Just from these little attractions? How?
Well, Dr. Hoffman had this great analogy. Think of a train of water molecules inside the plant's narrow vessels.
Okay.
The hydrogen bonds are like the couplings between the train cars. When one molecule evaporates from a leaf at the top, it pulls the next one up, which pulls the next one all the way down to the roots.
Wow. A water molecule train pulled by evaporation. That's actually incredible.
Isn't it? And it relies on two things happening because of hydrogen bonds. First, cohesion, that's water molecules sticking to each other, like the train cars being linked.
Cohesion. Water sticking to water.
And second, adhesion, that's water molecules sticking to other things, like the walls of the plant's vessels. That helps counteract gravity, too.
Adhesion. Water sticking to the walls. Both, thanks to hydrogen bonds.
Both driven by that fundamental polarity. And Dr. Hoffman made this amazing comparison. Think about getting water to the top of a skyscraper. We need massive pumps, right?
Yeah, huge energy cost.
A sequoia tree does the same thing hundreds of feet up, just using hydrogen bonds. Nature's engineering. It's pretty elegant.
Mind blown. Okay, so gravity defiance, check. What else do these hydrogen bonds give water? Dr. Hoffman talked about its skin.
Yes, surface tension.
I remember floating paper clips on water as a kid. Felt like magic.
It does feel like magic. But it's those hydrogen bonds again. Surface tension makes the surface of water act tougher, almost like a stretched film or skin.
How does that work? Why just the surface?
Well, think about a water molecule deep inside the liquid. It's being pulled equally in all directions by its neighbors, right?
Yeah, balance forces.
But a molecule right at the surface, it has neighbors beside it and below it, pulling it sideways and down, but there are hardly any molecules above it in the air to pull it upwards.
Ah, so the net pull is downwards and inwards.
Exactly. This inward pull causes the surface molecules to pack together more tightly, creating that tension, that skin.
Which is why water beads up and why bugs can walk on it.
Precisely. Like water striders. Yeah. They're literally walking on that tightly packed, hydrogen-bonded surface layer. You wouldn't see that with, say, oil, because oil molecules are nonpolar, they don't have that strong attraction.
Okay, polarity dictates physical stuff like climbing and surface skin. How does it affect how water deals with energy? Temperature regulation seems like a big one for life.
Oh, absolutely critical. Dr. Hoffman really focused on two thermal properties. First, water's incredibly high specific heat capacity.
Specific heat. Define that again.
It's the amount of energy you need to put in to raise the temperature of 1 gram of something by 1 degree Celsius.
Okay. And water's is high.
Extremely high. It means water is really hard to heat up and also really hard to cool down. Think a watched pot never boils, right? Or how much longer coffee stays hot compared to, say, soup broth, maybe.
Right. Or why the ocean takes forever to warm up in summer, even when the beach sand is scorching hot.
Exactly. That resistance to temperature change is huge. Dr. Hoffman pointed out that large bodies of water, like the oceans, act as massive temperature buffers for the planet. They warm up slowly, cool down slowly, which keeps coastal climates much more stable than inland areas.
And that stability was key for early life.
He argued it was essential. Life likely started in the ocean, partly because the temperature was so stable thanks to water's high specific heat.
Wow. Okay, so resistance to temperature change.
Yes.
That was the second thermal property.
High latent heat of vaporization.
Latent heat of vaporization. Sounds complex.
It just means the amount of energy needed to turn 1 gram of liquid water into water vapor, you know, to make it evaporate.
And water needs a lot of energy for that, too.
A ton of energy. Those hydrogen bonds, again, you have to break quite a few of them for a molecule to escape into the gas phase.
And why is that important for life?
Sweating. As Dr. Hoffman explained, this is literally a lifesaver. When we sweat, that water evaporates off our skin.
And it takes heat with it.
Exactly. The energy needed for evaporation comes from our body heat. So evaporation cools us down very effectively. It's vital in hot environments.
Okay, that makes sense. Cooling mechanism.
And there's a bit more to it. Temperature is basically the average speed of molecules. When water evaporates, it's the fastest moving molecules at the surface that have enough energy to break free.
Right. The high energy ones leave.
So the average speed and thus the temperature of the water left behind actually drops. It cools itself by evaporating.
Huh. Never thought of it that way.
Yeah. And Dr. Hoffman added that this also cools the air. As water evaporates from oceans or lakes, it absorbs a huge amount of heat from the air, making coastal areas cooler. That sea breeze feels cool for a reason.
Okay, this is all starting to be connect back to those hydrogen bonds. But what about ice? Why on earth does ice float? That seems wrong. Shouldn't solids be denser?
You'd think so. And for almost everything else, solids are denser than liquids. Dr. Hoffman highlighted water as one of the very, very few exceptions.
So why? Hydrogen bonds again?
You guessed it. It's all about how they arrange themselves when water freezes. As the molecules slow down, the hydrogen bonds lock them into a very specific, rigid, crystal lattice structure.
Like a fixed pattern.
Yeah, a crystalline structure, kind of like a repeated 3D pattern. And this structure actually holds the molecules further apart on average than they are in liquid water. There's more empty space.
More empty space means less dense, so ice is less dense than liquid water.
Exactly. In liquid water, the hydrogen bonds are constantly breaking and reforming, allowing the molecules to tumble around and pack closer together. When they freeze, they're forced into this more open, less dense arrangement.
And the implication for life. if ice sank.
Oh, disaster. Dr. Hoffman was very clear on this. If ice were denser, lakes and oceans would freeze from the bottom up.
Bottom up.
Yeah. Year after year, the ice would sink, more water would freeze on top, sink.
Yeah.
Eventually, entire bodies of water could freeze solid. Aquatic life wouldn't stand a chance.
But because it floats.
It forms an insulating layer on top. The ice shields the liquid water underneath from the freezing air temperatures, allowing fish and other organisms to survive the winter below. It's absolutely crucial.
Okay, mind truly blown now.
Mm-hmm.
Physical properties, thermal properties, density anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Dr. Hoffman called water an excellent solvent.
The universal solvent, sometimes it's called, though that's a bit of an exaggeration. But yes, it's incredibly good at dissolving things.
Why be less? Polarity.
You're getting the hang of this. Yes, its polarity is key because water molecules have those partial positive hydrogen and partial negative oxygen ends. They can surround and interact with other polar molecules or with fully charged ions.
Ions, like in salt.
Exactly. Dr. Hoffman used table salt, sodium chloride, NaCl, as the classic example. Salt is made of positive sodium ions, Na+, and negative chloride ions,
yeah.
Cl. When you put salt in water, the water molecules swarm around the ions. The negative oxygen ends of water attract the positive sodium ions, and the positive hydrogen ends attract the negative chloride ions.
They surround them.
Yeah, they form like a little shroud or shell of water molecules around each ion, effectively pulling the ions away from the salt crystal and keeping them separated, dissolved in the water.
And that's why oil doesn't dissolve.
Right.
Because it's nonpolar.
Precisely. Water molecules don't have anything to grab onto with oil molecules, no charges to interact with, so they stay separate.
And this dissolving power is important for life because...
Because, as Dr. Hoffman put it, life is fundamentally aqueous solution chemistry.
Meaning chemistry happening in water.
Exactly. All the vital chemical reactions inside our cells, metabolism, building proteins, everything happened with molecules dissolved in water. Water is the medium for life's chemistry. It even dissolves huge molecules like proteins by interacting with charges on their surface.
Bro, okay. Solvent power. Is there anything left? Oh, auto-intonization. That sounds complicated.
It sounds scarier than it is. Auto-intonization just means water molecules can sort of react with themselves, even in perfectly pure water.
React with themselves? How?
Dr. Hoffman explained it well. Occasionally, one water molecule will actually pull a hydrogen nucleus, which is just a proton, H+, off of a neighboring water molecule.
It steals a proton.
Effectively, yeah. The molecule that loses the proton becomes a negatively charged hydroxide ion, OH. The molecule that gains the proton becomes a positively charged hydronium ion, H3O+. We often just simplify H3O+ and call it a hydrogen ion, H+H.
Okay, so water spontaneously breaks apart slightly into H+ and OH ions.
A tiny, tiny amount does, yes. And it's a reversible process. The crucial point Dr. Hoffman made is that in pure water, this process always creates exactly one H+ for every one OH. They're perfectly balanced.
Equal numbers. And that balance is why pure water is neutral.
That's exactly why. Which leads us directly to...
the pH scale. Measuring acidity.
You got it. The pH scale is all about the concentration of those hydrogen ions, H+, that are produced in part by auto-intonization.
So how does the scale work? Dr. Hoffman mentioned it was kind of weird.
It is a bit unusual. He pointed out three key things. One, it's logarithmic.
Meaning
each whole number step isn't an equal addition. It's a tenfold multiplication. So pH 6 has 10 times more H+ than pH 7. pH 5 has 100 times more H+ than pH 7.
Whoa, okay. Big jumps. What else?
Two, it's a negative logarithm, which sounds technical, but it just means lower pH numbers mean higher acidity, more H+. High numbers mean lower acidity or more basic alkaline.
So low number is more acid. Got it. And the third thing.
The center point, pH 7, isn't random. It's 7 because that's the pH of pure water, where the H+ concentration from autofluorization is naturally 1 times 10 to the power of minus 7 molar. The math just works out that way.
So pure water is the neutral midpoint.
Exactly. Then, if you add an acid to water, it releases extra H+ ions, increasing their concentration and lowering the pH below 7.
Then a base.
A base or an alkaline substance does the opposite. It usually increases the concentration of hydroxide ions, which effectively mop up some of the H+ ions, reducing their concentration and raising the pH above 7.
Okay. And Dr. Oppen mentioned our bodies mostly stick close to neutral.
Yeah, most of our cells operate best at a pH very near 7, maybe slightly alkaline, like 7.4 for blood. The big exception, he noted, is the stomach.
Right, the stomach is super acidic.
Hugely acidic, down around pH 2, sometimes even lower. That's thanks to hydrochloric acid, which is vital for breaking down food and also for killing nasty bacteria we might swallow.
So maintaining the right pH is obviously critical inside us. Why? Yeah. What happens if the pH goes wrong even slightly?
That gets to the core of why pH balance is life or death. Dr. Hoffman talked about proteins again.
The workhorse molecules.
Absolutely. They do almost everything. And their function depends entirely on their precise, folded, 3D shape, their conformation.
Shape equals function.
You got it. But that shape is delicate. It's held together by various forces, including interactions that are sensitive to pH. If the pH changes too much, those interactions break down and the protein unfolds or changes shape. That's called denaturation.
Denaturation. And if it denatures?
It loses its function completely. Okay. Imagine enzymes stopping working or structural proteins collapsing. If enough key proteins denature, the cell can't function and the organism dies quickly.
Wow. So temperature and pH are critical environmental factors for proteins. That's homeostasis, right? Keeping things stable.
That's the essence of homeostasis. Keeping internal conditions like temperature and pH within the very narrow range that allows proteins, and therefore life, to function.
And Dr. Hoffman connected this denaturation idea to a real-world problem.
Yes, acid rain. A perfect, large-scale example of pH disruption.
How does that work again?
He explained that burning fossil fuels, especially in industry and diesel engines, releases pollutants like sulfur oxides and nitrogen oxides.
Okay.
These gases react with water vapor in the atmosphere to form acids, sulfuric acid, nitric acid.
So the rain itself becomes acidic.
Exactly. Rain that's significantly more acidic than normal falls to the ground, lowering the pH of lakes, rivers, and soil.
And that lowered pH.
So it's denaturing proteins in the organisms living there. Trees get damaged, fish die off, entire ecosystems suffer because the fundamental chemistry of life is being disrupted by the change in pH.
So it harms the environment, which then indirectly harms us because we rely on those ecosystems.
Wow. That's the main impact on humans, as Dr. Hoffman noted. It's not usually direct harm from touching acid rain, but the cascade effect through the environment and food chains. So when you really pull it all together, like Dr. Hoffman did, it's kind of staggering. Capillary action, letting trees drink, surface tension, the incredible temperature stability, ice floating, protecting aquatic life, water being the ultimate solvent for life's reactions, even the subtle balance of auto-engineization setting the stage for pH.
It all comes back to that simple bend in the molecule, the polarity and the hydrogen bonds that result from it.
Every single one of those special properties traces back to that fundamental structure. It really hammers home Dr. Hoffman's main point. Water isn't just around life, it's actively shaped by water and utterly dependent on its unique chemistry. It's truly indispensable.
It really makes you think. Next time you see rain or boil a kettle or just take a sip of water, pause for a second. Consider that amazing, intricate dance of molecules, the polarity, the hydrogen bonds, everything that had to be just right for life as we know it to even get started, let alone thrive. Makes you wonder, what other ordinary things around us are hiding secrets just as profound?